Twitchell's Book One, Dwindling Magic. Written and read by T.D. L. White. Chapter 27. Under Attack. The fine mist continued to hang in the air around Twitchell's on Thursday. James was reduced to shuffling across the lawn like a 90-year-old. Nick wasn't sure how much longer the other boy would be able to keep his illness secret. Attending Twitchell's was literally killing him. Somehow, James made it through the day, and made it to the study room with Elf and Jenny. Nick left them and made himself a cup of tea in the common room. He had zero FOMO. 2 hours of boring prep was far better than even the tiniest chance of meeting the rats. By a mile. Up until dinner time, everything was going to plan. It was only after eating pizza and chips that things began to disintegrate. James showed up right at the end of the dinner hour, shuffling painfully slowly across the hall. Nick abandoned his ice cream and hurried over to meet him. "Thanks for getting me," Nick said. "You didn't need to come."
"It's no problem," James wheezed, putting a hand out to steady himself against the table, missing it and almost toppling over.
Nick caught him and balanced him upright.
"The others got away fine. Should be at the auction by now."
The 3-minute walk to the study room took them a quarter of an hour, with Nick having to put an arm around the other boy to keep him moving. "Nearly there," Nick said for the 10th time as they reached the corridor that led to the study room. And then, all the lights went out. Just for a moment before flickering back on. Nick checked his watch. It was just after 8.
"What was that?" James whispered.
"Power cut," Nick said. Then he remembered the LCRS request he'd seen on Collier's laptop. Maybe it was more than just the lights.
"You keep going toward the study room. I need to check something."
He helped James over to the wall so that the other boy could lean on it. Wi-Fi time was underway in the common room, which was at the far end of the corridor. Nick jogged down to the common room door and gave it a push. It wouldn't budge. He knocked on it hard and kept on knocking till he heard the whine of the caretaker.
"Stop knocking," she said. "What's the problem?"
"Try the door," Nick said. "Pull it." The door handle rattled as she tried it.
"Is that Nick Thompson?"
"Yes."
"Then stop messing around," she barked. "You're already in enough trouble."
"It's not me doing it," Nick said. "The door network's been hacked. They've locked all the doors."
"That's not possible," she said in a matter-of-fact voice. "Stupid old thing's just jammed."
"Can you check the networks from in there?" Nick asked. "Can you remote in to see what's going on?"
"If you're doing some kind of revenge trick, I won't be happy."
"You're never happy."
"I'm not, I promise."
A few moments later, the caretaker replied, a little concern creeping into her voice.
"The network's down, that's all. I can't get a signal. The routers must have reset after that power cut. We'll have to wait for them to reboot."
It's not the routers, Nick thought.
"And when they fail, is the default that everything locks or unlocks?" he asked.
Silence. She was starting to understand.
"I think Twitchell's has been hacked. The real network. Not the honeypot that I got into. If I get you a mobile signal, can you remote in from outside to fix it?"
"There's no mobile data coverage here," the caretaker said. "It's written into the provider's contracts."
"I'm not talking about here. Look, will it help or not?"
"Yes."
"Give me a minute."
Nick ran back to James, who didn't seem to have moved at all.
"This way," Nick said. "We're not leaving from the study room."
He put a hand round James's waist and heaved the smaller boy painfully slowly toward the common room. It was like helping his granddad. Nick felt a mix of concern and impatience, but knew there was not much he could do to speed James up. "Open the portal here," Nick said when they finally made it to within a few meters of the common room door.
"You sure? If someone comes past..."
"They won't, trust me. All the doors have been locked." James took a moment to steady himself and draw the symbol. Nick banged on the door.
"You ready?" he said.
"Not got anything else to do," the caretaker said. "I hope for your sake this doesn't turn out to be a prank."
Seconds later, a portal opened in the middle of the hallway, and James was floating toward the ceiling.
"That's better," he said, breathing deeply. "Good old Brighton."
Nick caught him and pulled him down, letting go so that he didn't float up himself. He put his face next to the common room door. "Got a connection?"
"Yes," the caretaker said skeptically. "Not quite sure how you did it. Now, keep quiet for a minute. I've only got my phone, so I need to concentrate."
Nick did as he was told. Now that James was weightless, he seemed much happier. Or perhaps there was a touch of magic seeping in from Brighton, fighting the effects of the poison.
"All right, I believe you," the caretaker said after 5 long minutes.
"Someone hacked us, and by the looks of it, it was North Korea or China. Luckily, we've got a bunch of fail-safes built in for situations like this. I've switched my phone to the local network now. Doors should be back in my control in about 5 minutes."
What kind of school has fail-safes in case they get hacked by a foreign government?
"I'll be leaving here now," Nick said. Then he had a thought.
"Does this have anything to do with the auction today?"
He heard the caretaker groan.
"I guess that's a yes."
"I won't know until I've got full control. I'm going to assume you mean the auction at the Albert Hall, because of course you know about that." The sarcasm dripped off her words. "You're a fourth year. Why wouldn't a fourth year know about the stuff that's secret and dangerous and nothing to do with them?"
"Yes, that one," Nick said.
"Why would the alchemist be disabling Twitchell's network during the auction? I'm really asking because there's a few other fourth years at the auction right now who might need to know."
"This isn't getting any better," the caretaker said. "Each time you speak, I die a little inside. If I had to guess, and this is the guess of an experienced army counterintelligence red teamer here, I'd say that the auction is about to become a very, very dangerous place to be. And just to let you know, I'm sending those exact words to the inspector right now."
"Where's the inspector?" Nick had to ask.
"Don't pretend you don't know," she said. "You know just about everything else that we've been keeping secret. The inspector's been busy all week because he's running a sting operation to catch a whole load of the very worst people in the country that he's managed to ensure are, as of this moment, all carefully corralled into one easy-to-arrest space. Can you guess where that might be?"
It was Nick's turn to groan.
"The Albert Hall?"
"Bingo."
"Okay," Nick said. "Thanks for your help, and good luck getting everything back online."
"Where are you going?"
"I don't want to tell you."
"Well, while I'm stuck in here, I can't possibly stop you."
"That's true."
The caretaker sighed. "I'll let the inspector know you're on your way."
Nick didn't respond. He held James's arm and kicked off the wall toward the back of Elf's house. When they were inside, Nick began to worry. As soon as they'd landed, he'd sent a message to Jenny and Elf, but as far as he could tell, they hadn't received it yet. He had to get to London fast to warn them. That meant going alone, because there was no way that James was capable of anything other than, hopefully, conjuring him a decent portal.
"What do I need?" Nick asked, looking around the kitchen.
"Ticket, a costume, and maybe some kind of weapon?"
"Weapon?" Nick asked.
"You know, just in case. Actually, you only need a ticket. You won't fit in my Dragon Rider costume. It's way too small for you. But, and I didn't want to mention it yesterday in front of Elf, those Mage Lord costumes are pretty similar to Twitchell's uniforms."
"But with shorter skirts," Nick said, finding the spare ticket and tucking it into his jacket pocket.
"Just keep your school trousers on and you'll be fine. I've got a symbol for the Albert Hall ready. I was thinking of opening one in Hyde Park. Shouldn't be too many people there right now, but I may as well get you as close to the action as possible."
"What if I'm seen?" Nick messaged the other two again, this time using SMS. There was still no sign that they'd read the first message.
"You might not be seen. Better to get you there fast with a chance of witnesses than worry about you getting lost in a park at night. Now, I haven't practiced this portal nearly enough to get it near the ground, so I'll draw the symbol and then hand you the key to the air, and you'll have to take it with you. And probably a good idea to take some ink and a notebook too."
James handed him a blank notebook and the ink pouch. Nick put them in his bag.
"I thought we weren't going to let the key get anywhere near the auction."
"Can't do anything about that now. You ready?"
Nick was not ready. He nodded.
James drew the portal. As it opened, Nick could see the domed roof of the Albert Hall. They were level with the balustrade around the edge, at least 50 feet up, and there were people on the pavement underneath.
"Don't worry about them," James said. "Take the quill, put your hood up, and I'll give you a shove in the right direction. Just hope the wind doesn't catch you.
As they passed the quill between them, Cece, wearing the dull grey dog fur, bounded down the stairs and sprang onto Nick's shoulder.
There, at least you're not alone. Cece'll keep you safe.
James guided Nick through the portal and pushed him gently toward the ground.
Good luck.
What about a weapon? Nick said, but it was too late. He floated silently through the air between Brighton and London. All James could do was wave a tired old man's wave. Drifting downwards past the tall glass windows, Nick was pleased that Cece had hitched a ride. He was also relieved that, almost directly underneath him, was a merchandise stall selling t-shirts and, rather usefully, helium-filled dragons from the game. If the people on the stall noticed Nick's ungainly flight past the dragons, they didn't show it. Perhaps other concert-goers had descended in the same manner. He kept Cece tucked under his arm and pulled his hood low as he got his bearings. The great, circular, red brick landmark was right in front of him. He was level with door number one, and so started walking toward door number two. He needed to find door 13. Then he remembered that the doors wrapped all the way round the building, so he spun round and walked back past door one. The next entrance was the stage door, which didn't have a number. Then there was a door to a restaurant, and past that was door 12. No sign of door 13. Nick doubled back toward the restaurant and spotted a large statue on a tall square plinth in front of the hall. On his side of the plinth was a large black door, and on either side of the door were two large men dressed in black suits. It struck Nick as somewhat odd that two men would be guarding a door to a statue. He was just about to go over and ask the men if they knew where door 13 was, when Cece wriggled free and scurried away from the men and toward a tree on the far side of the statue. Under the tree was another large figure dressed in a long black coat with the hood pulled low, concealing their face. More importantly, perched on their shoulder was a big black raven. Cece almost reached the bird, then scampered back towards Nick and stopped halfway. The statue would have to wait. Nick approached the bird and Cece jumped back up into his arms.
"You must be Nick. I recognize the uniform," the bird said in a rather smooth voice, with a touch of royalty to it.
"Yes," Nick said after a slight pause. He'd never spoken to a bird before. At least, not one that could talk back.
"The inspector received a message from the caretaker not more than 10 minutes ago."
"Is everything fine?" Nick asked. "I mean at the auction."
"As far as we can tell from up here, the inspector's gone down to ensure everything is still running as expected."
Nick nodded back toward the statue. "Is that door 13 over there? I couldn't find one on the actual building."
"Yes. The auction's in the lower sub-basement hall, and the only way in is via the elevator in the statue."
As the bird finished talking, the street lights and the Albert Hall's external lights dimmed and then went out completely. There were still patches of ambient light emitted from the nearby buildings, but the area in front of the hall and all around the statue was now in a deep shadow. The people running the merchandise stand pulled their phones out to light the goods.
"Just a little blackout," one of them said confidently. "Lights will be back on in a moment."
Two black vans pulled into the darkness of the pavement near the statue, stopping right in front of the door.
"This isn't good," the raven said. "Master, go see what's happening."
The hooded figure, the master, strode toward the vans, and the bird flapped its wings and took to the air. Nick followed the man, but stayed well back. He heard the van's sliding doors open, and through the darkness saw the shapes of a dozen figures climb out of each one. Soldiers in black uniforms, carrying batons instead of guns. The master reached the far side of the statue and was immediately set upon by the soldiers and shoved hard to the ground. But the man had help, as no sooner had he hit the floor, the sky above him was filled with wings and claws. Ravens began to dive bomb his attackers. Nick moved round to get a better view of the door and immediately regretted it, as one of the birds peeled away from the flock and flew straight for him. It was Melina.
"Stay back," she cried. "He's here. We're outnumbered. They're taking the auction. Stay back."
She flapped hard, heading back to help the master, who had made it back onto his feet. The nearest soldier tried to kick him back down, then stopped, turned toward Nick and started moving his way. Nick didn't need any more encouragement. He ran toward the merchandise stand, then past it, putting a good distance between himself and the attackers. Moments later, he was crouching in one of the doorways to the Albert Hall. He risked a look back past the stand. The curve of the building meant he couldn't see the statue or anywhere near it. After hiding there for what seemed like an eternity, the lights came back on. "See?" the voice from the merchandise stand said. "Back on in no time." "This is useless," Nick said to Cece, getting up and slowly making his way back toward the statue. "I'm no good in a fight. Jenny and Elf would have helped Melina and the Master. So would James, if he wasn't so sick. I just ran away." As he rounded the building, it was as if nothing had happened. The vans were gone, so were the soldiers, the ravens, Melina and the Master. There were still two suited men stationed in front of the door, but something about them had shifted. They looked less sharp, less official security, and more frayed at the edges, more ragged and unpredictable. Nick slipped his hand into his pocket, fingers brushing over the ticket, and for a brief moment he locked eyes with one of the men. They had that familiar look, the kind of boys that Nick had spent years instinctively dodging. He left the ticket safely tucked in his jacket and kept walking, right past the men and down the stairs, away from the statue and away from the Albert Hall. He planted himself on a low wall in front of a patch of overgrown bushes and tried to piece together what had just happened and what, if anything, he was supposed to do about it. "I think the alchemist has taken over the auction," he said to Cece, "and Elf and Jenny are trapped inside."
"Sounds like exactly the sort of situation that could lead to a fight."
Nick leapt to his feet at the unmistakable sound of a Scottish voice emanating from the bushes behind him.
"Yeah," Bobby said. "We get more fights per hour with you lot than anyone else."
Despite the feeling in his stomach and the cold sweat beading on his palms, Nick forced himself to sit back on the wall. He might not be much good in a fight himself, but perhaps, by mustering the courage to team up with the two nightmarish creatures in the bushes behind him, he might uncover a way to help his friends. This podcast was brought to you by me, T.D.L. White. I'll be reading a chapter a week until it's complete.